Happy Saturday. This is Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side Radio. Today, we're going to talk very briefly about terror, ISIS, our illustrious Commander-in-Chief, Obama, his illustrious national security team. I'm trying not to laugh as I utter those words. With some references in the write-up, by the way, to my past shows, which I encourage you to listen to. Relative to this mess, which is ever-evolving, ever-deepening, and ever-darker and more malevolent in the Mideast. And unfortunately, I don't think we ain't seen nothing yet. Anyway, we're also going to be talking about exactly why we are all getting poorer. You know, I did a show, there'll be a link in the write-up also, about the 27 ways that the middle class is getting screwed, in the last month or so. You might want to listen to that show. It's a bullet point, if you will, of all the nastiness. Well, not all. Why don't we say 27 glaring examples of the nastiness which is befalling us enemies of the state. You know, we work, we pay taxes, we believe in the Constitution. We believe in freedom, private property, the work ethic. We're not big fans of the welfare state, and we're not big fans of this government run amok, whether it's the administration or its shadow government that it's installed in the form of agencies. And today, I want to talk a little bit more about that topic, and I'm going to give you some insight into why. The why we're getting poorer, us enemies of the state, the middle class. And today we're going to talk a little bit about, and this kind of ties into the first segment of the show and to the several shows I've done on the rising threat to America from what is devolving in the Middle East. I hate to use the word evolving. Let's put it this way. If worst comes to worst, there's going to be certain things that you need to survive, you and your family. And I think over the next several shows, I'm going to talk about each of them in depth, in turn. Hopefully you're reading the articles that we post. We try not to overdo it under the family safety heading down below each show. If not, you might want to go back and read previous articles on previous shows. There's a lot of good information there from a lot of different sources. And some good stuff to buy that you might need. And if you don't need, you can always use for camping or hunting or whatever you do. But today we're going to talk about water in the final part of the show and what you can do to make sure that that staple of life, the most important single thing to your survival, is at hand just in case you need it. So let's get started, shall we? Number one, this week we have witnessed the incredible spectacle of yet more petulant and ever-increasing hostility toward our only ally, if we have any allies, left in the Middle East, Israel, and Netanyahu's upcoming speech to Congress on March 3rd. We have Democrats boycotting it left and right, and we have the president who just got done with doing a video of making faces in the mirror to try and sell Obamacare, and an interview with a green-lipped gal who drinks milk that she's laying in a bathtub with Fruit Loops or whatever the cereal was. I'm sure Putin is shaking in his boots. And ISIS is ready to fold their tents at such images. You know, I mean, wow. Okay. I think the whole world can't wait for this guy to get out of office. But we have the president standing up there in several different interviews. Number one, he called the attacks. This is after the French terrorist calls the TV station and says, "I am at this kosher deli to kill Jews." He calls these attacks in Paris random. Okay, no problem. And that was a big faux pas, loop-de-loo, supported by Jen Psaki at the State Department. God, she's pathetic. And Ernest at the press briefing room, the White House press briefing room, he's only one level above Carney. And then we had Susan Rice give a speech to the Brookings Institute, where basically she doubled down on the feckless policy of the administration and said, hey, man, everything is working just dandy. We're not changing a thing. And then we have the president submit a war resolution to Congress, which basically dilutes the war resolution already in place from 2002 and has language which even the White House can't explain. You can Google that up. They gave a briefing to Congress, and the White House lawyers couldn't even explain what the language was. There should be no enduring offensive operations or whatever. You know, progressives are amazing. They know it's all in the words, right? And they really do think this president, his entire team in the White House, just as Gruber admitted, remember the guy from healthcare, that we're all stupid. That's right. We're just the sheep. Well, I don't know about you, but I ain't no sheep. And I understand the play on words, and I understand the intent behind the play on words. What this president is trying to do is dilute our war effort. This ties right in with my previous shows as to what he is really all about. There's been several other indications, should we say additional dots to those I furnished you in those shows, that he is at the least hugely sympathetic to the Muslim cause. It is, after all, in his mind, the religion of the downtrodden and the brown-skinned. And then in his heart of hearts, he really thinks ISIS and those folks who are not Islamist, according to him, you know, famous quote, he really thinks they're freedom fighters. Yes, he does. And above all, he wants Iran to get the bomb. Prompted, no doubt, listen to my previous shows by Valerie Jarrett, born in Tehran, Iran. And everything he's doing right now is to make sure he doesn't upset that apple cart. The petulance with Israel because he's afraid Netanyahu, who is a great speaker, and who has at his disposal the Mossad, probably the greatest spy agency in the world, with boots on the ground, unlike America, talking to Congress, and he's afraid that he's going to whip up enough votes to veto or to override the veto that the president has promised on future Iranian sanctions. I've talked about that too, not going to beat a dead horse. But we have the spectacle this week. Remember back in September when the president stood up and said, we have this, you know, they're JVs and we have this great program, and Somalia and Yemen are just the examples of how great we're doing on stemming this flow and growth of terror, not Islamic terror in his words, this growth of terror and extremism and whatever other nonsense words they use instead of jihad, radical Islam, Islamist extremists, Islamic terrorists, you know, all the things that these people really are. And of course, we have Yemen totally in collapse, just as I predicted in my previous shows. So Yemen collapses, the embassy gets evacuated. The Houthi, which are really they're the same as Hezbollah. I mean, they're just Iranian proxies, are now in charge of the capital. And we have the horrendous image of U.S. Marines having to turn over their weapons on orders from John Kerry's State Department. This is the same State Department that allowed men, former SEALs, to die on a rooftop in Benghazi. I mean, one really has to wonder, at what the hell is going on. United States Marines forced to turn over their weapons to Islamic terrorists when we have a battle group and evacuation plans right off the coast? Really? Wow. If I was one of those Marines, folks, my eyes would be crossed. I would be so pissed off. I'm not one of those Marines, those brave men. And I'm so pissed off, my eyes are crossed anyway. So what kind of image does that send to the world? To ISIS, to Al-Qaeda, to Iran, to Boko, and countless other terrorist groups, to Putin. You think Putin would order his Russian elite to lay down their weapons to the Ukrainians and skulk back across the border on a commercial flight, no less, right? Our State Department didn't even have the balls to send in a military plane with military support standing ready off the coast to effect the evacuation. Absolutely outrageous. And another dot. Now, I could go on with other things that happened this week. You've probably heard them. And if you haven't, actually, I commend you because they just sicken you. But it is just la-di-da, more of the same, and it's going to be more and more of the same, folks. We're going to talk about that on future shows. Let's get into the meat of this show, and that is why we're getting poorer, us enemies of the state, the hardworking middle class who pays taxes, supports the Constitution, and is the underpinning of American values. Not Obama's values, which are not American, but American values. So, let's step back a little bit. You know, the really wealthy are well-connected politically. Anywhere in the Western world, America, Europe, whatever. It's called crony capitalism. We've seen all sorts of examples of it in the solar stuff, you know, where all his buddies got money for solar deals, some of them which were bankrupt, by the way, bankrupt. I'm talking about in bankruptcy at the time they got the money from the government. And I've talked in previous shows about the 10, 12, who knows how many billion, because this ain't a transparent deal, that's been lost in money that's gone into the pockets of people who have turned out to be his campaign contributors. Well, the same thing happens in Europe. And what a lot of these very wealthy folks, the true 1% that he likes to decry in his BS speeches to us, the guys who keep him and put him in power so that they can make money on our backs. What these guys have done, both in the United States and in Europe, they've bought bonds, government bonds. And as the governments have tried to inflate their currency by printing more money, remember QE3 by the Fed, and I've talked about Europe, which is now embarking on its own QE program, like 1.3 or 1.2 trillion euros. I mean, the numbers are so outrageous, it's almost ridiculous. They're going to print money. And they're going to print money. You know what they're going to do with it? They're going to do the same thing the Federal Reserve has done with it over here. They're going to buy their own debt. And you know who they're going to buy it from? They're going to buy it from all their buddy bankers and all their buddy cronies and all their buddy 1% bondholders. So our tax money, our kids' future, is going to go to bail out people who rightfully should be going under with what's happened with the currency wars that are going on around the world right now. And of course, this is all given the guise of saving Europe from deflation and stimulating the American economy and whatever nonsense they want to conjure up. But the bottom line is, it's a way to transfer wealth from the middle class and the children and the grandchildren and the great-grandchildren and the great-great-grandchildren yet unborn of the middle class to the cronies who keep these corrupt scum in power. Let me give you some facts and figures. So, you know, we went off the gold standard in the 1970s. Thank you, President Nixon. Bad decision. And at that point, nothing backed our dollar. It was just paper. Now, it was the reserve currency of the world, and everybody, you know, accepts a dollar as a dollar. But the reality is that the dollar began to slip then. It was actually slipping before, but it began a precipitous slide at that point. You know, the fastest GDP and wage growth in human history was in the 19th century. It slowed down a little bit in the 20th century, was spurred by World War II, and then began to slow again. We went off the dollar. And you know, since then, the cost of living in the United States has risen 600%. I want you to think about that. The 1970s, folks, is only like 45 years ago, give or take 5 years. And the cost of living has increased 600%. Now, the cost of living doesn't really affect the 1%, does it? It affects us, the middle class. At the same time, the rate of economic growth has fallen rather precipitously, particularly in the last 6 years under Obama. And I don't care about the anomalies of 3% growth. I talked about this in the last show during Christmas season, which all the leftist media likes to say, oh, look, it's the summer of recovery, or I guess the Christmas of recovery. Yeah, whatever, nonsense. Now we have aging populations. We have hugely rising debt levels. We've talked about this. We're going to hit $20 trillion in primary national debt, $100 to $160 trillion, depending upon which economist you want to listen to, in unfunded liabilities, which rises, by the way, somewhere between 2 and 3% a year. I did a show. Here's yet another link for you in the write-up down below. I did a show on the unfunded liabilities, and there was a chart in there. Hit that link. Listen to that show if you can. But at the very least, look at that chart of the growth of debt. Just based on its current growth. Never mind what happens when interest rates go up and we're paying more interest. And all that money, folks, comes out of the pockets of the middle class, us. Whether it's now or future generations, it's on our backs. So the ECB is going to put in this $1.3 trillion for the benefit of the financial elite over the next 21 months in Europe. And the Fed over here is supposedly winding down their similar deal. But not really. And we're supposed to foot the bill. So how is it possible for us to get poorer? By us, I mean, you know, us, the backbone of America. How is it possible for us to get poorer in what has been, you know, over the average, the most productive and prosperous time ever in the history of the world and the history of America? Pretty damn easy. You know, the guys who are making decisions are central bankers and the president of the United States and all his little minions and henchmen and socialist props, progressive communist plants. Because remember, debt is his friend. What he wants to do to America, he can accomplish through overburdening the system with debt, Cloward and Piven. I've talked about it many times. If you don't know it yet, just Google up Cloward and Piven and read. You will be right up to speed. This is part of this guy's plan. So America's disappearing wealth what really creates it? I mean, yeah, these are all factors, okay? Part of the wealth is disappearing into that segment of the population. I think Romney called them the 47%, unfortunately, for the election, who don't produce, who don't work, and who live off our backs like leeches. With the full blessing of the government, who is using our money to buy their votes, to stay in power with campaigns financed by their cronies, their crony one percenters. Hopefully you're following this. Let's call those people who suckle at the public trough, i.e. our pockets, let's call them zombies. What's really happening here is that we're getting eaten by the zombies. Because the increase in this debt, not only does it bail out the super wealthy elite buddies of the people in power, but it buys the vote of those people who suckle at the public trough. And that money is our money. Let me give you some facts and statistics here. In the third quarter of 1983, there were 224.3 million people in the United States. In the third quarter of 2012, there were 308.9 million people receiving benefits from government programs. In 1983, were 66.5 million people, about 29%. And in the third quarter of 2012, under Mr. Obama, 152.9 million people, that is 49.5% of America's population, were receiving government checks. The difference is 86.4 million people, some of whom, unfortunately, vote. Social Security, there were 31.7 million people getting Social Security benefits in 1983. There are 51.5 million getting them now. That's 19.8 million more people getting Social Security benefits. Part of that is the aging demographics of the country. And Social Security is something that you've paid in that you expect to get out, although your money's been long spent, folks, I hate to tell you. The trust fund has been raided forever and replaced with worthless IOUs. Now it's simply replenished by borrowing on the borrowing on the borrowing on the borrowing and borrowing again on the debt. Medicare, 26.7 million people in the third quarter of 1983, 48.2 million people on Medicare in the third quarter of 2012, once again partially a factor of an aging demographic. All those means-tested programs, you know, where they kind of arbitrarily decide a poverty level, I think pretty much based on how they want the population in that area to vote. 42.1 million people in 1983, 109.3 million people in 2012. Think about that growth, folks. I mean, that's a 35% growth rate. Almost 1% a year. In fact, a little bit more than 1% a year. Absolutely unbelievable. Other federal programs like food stamps and that kind of stuff, 3.2 million in 1983, 20.4 million. I'm sorry, that wasn't food stamps. Those are other government programs like, what's a good one? Oh, yes, the Earned Child Income Tax Credit, you know, which all our friends south of the border like to come up here and have kids to get. And the more kids you have, the more you get. In fact, as a sidelight, you probably heard the story, but it's been discovered that in Obama's executive order, or should we say in the implementation of his executive order by HHS and Department of Homeland Security and the Internal Revenue Service, all entities we can trust so much, aren't they? It appears that illegal aliens who were just granted kind of amnesty, partial amnesty status by El Presidente. Hola, El Presidente. It seems that many of them, millions of them, are eligible for $500 tax rebates. Never mind that they've never paid tax and they just came to this country. They're actually going to get checks from our pockets. I'm not making, you couldn't make this stuff up. I'm going to have more on this in the next few weeks as I dig up some more facts and some articles, because this is obviously something that the mainstream media does not want to cover. Food stamps. I got a little ahead of myself. 18.7 million people in 1983. 50.9 million people now. Actually, third quarter of 2012. It's more now. Pretty amazing. 32.1 million more people in the third quarter of 2012 than in 1983. And then, of course, we have AFDC, which went from 9.3 million to 5.4 million, the only statistic to decrease. Part of that because of Obamacare, I'm told. And then we have women, infants, and children, you know, all the goodies that go to them, particularly if you're not from here, particularly if you're illegal, particularly if you're a resident of another country who happened to have a baby here, you know, the baby tourism industry. 2.4 million in 1983 and 22.7 million in the third quarter of 2012. I mean, that is just, that's just unbelievable. Unbelievable. And then Medicaid. Oh boy. 17.5 million in the third quarter of 83 and 83.1 million now, and expanding rapidly. And you know what, folks? Not only is this a drain on your pocketbook at the federal level, this is going to be in those states that were stupid enough to implement an exchange and a Medicare program. Fortunately, Wyoming was not one of those states stupid enough to do it, to rely on the untrustworthy promises of a government who changes its mind from minute to minute, federal government. That money is going to start affecting state coffers. So those of you in states with income taxes, I'm going to be talking about this next week. What states are the best ones to live in? You might want to reconsider your location, because it's not going to get better. It's going to get worse. So anyway, as the number of middle-class flesh-eating zombies increase, there's fewer people that create jobs, that build businesses, which create jobs and create wealth. The result is that in the last 6 years, the U.S. has slipped from first to 12th amongst developed nations in terms of its business, new business activity. Hungary, Denmark, Finland, New Zealand, Sweden, Israel, Italy, just to name a few. Italy? I mean, Italy's broke, and they're outpacing us in new business formation? Holy moly. That is a scary statistic. Let me keep going on that. Because if you don't have people starting businesses, you're not creating wealth and you're not creating jobs. You see how this all, this is the trickle down in reverse. This is the vacuum cleaner in your pockets that not only empties your pockets, but emaciates your frame as the zombies slowly suck on your flesh. With full government approval, I might add. So, in starting new firms per capita, that is, new firms per person, and this is probably our most serious economic problem, but you never hear about this in the mainstream media. Never. Because to admit this would be to admit the failure of socialist and communist programs. American business deaths In other words, American businesses that fold now for the first time outnumber new business startups. That's a really, 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 really bad statistic for the middle class. Since the middle class, as we all know, and many of you listening to this show can attest to, is primarily made up not just of worker bees and managers and those kind of people, but people who own their own business. It might be just them, it might be them and their kids, you know, whatever it is. It is the bulwark of the American economy and has been the engine of American prosperity and advance since America was founded. What's happened is that now, about roughly, this is rough figures, somewhere between 9 and 10% of all firms are closing every year. And new business startups are slightly over 8%. That's a 1% difference, but it's really a 10 to 12% differential, if you follow. And it's huge. In the early 1970s, there were 200,000 new businesses created each year, net of business closures. Now the number is negative. No new businesses, no new jobs, no new wealth. And in the meantime, the wealth that does exist gets eaten by the zombies. So, what are we to do with terrorism on the rise? Terrorists chanting now over about roughly a quarter of the Earth's surfaces, death to America, death to Israel. Terrorist leaders vowing to, let's see, what did they say, cut off Obama's head in the White House, I think one of them said. I think they view him as an apostate. That's a Muslim who isn't really a Muslim, or a Muslim who's drifted from strict Sharia. Whatever. We'll let them use those terms. The rise of terrorists everywhere, the fall of governments everywhere, 3 in just the last 45 days in the Mideast. One of them touted as a shining example of our successful fight against terror, not Islamic terror, terror, extremists, militants. You know, in addition to the problem with our physical safety and security, and in addition to this zombie feast on the middle class, and in the zombies I include the government, one of the things which is stifling new business formation is tax. What did Obama just propose? Another $3 trillion in taxes. This is the guy who has raised taxes more than any other president in decades. This is the guy who enjoys more tax revenue than has ever been generated in the history of the United States and still spends more than he brings in on purpose, I might add. Think about this. When you wake up in the morning and have your first cup of coffee, you pay a sales tax. When you go to your garage and you start your car, you pay an automobile tax. When you drive to work, you pay a gas tax. When you go to work, you pay an income tax. If you turn on the lights, you pay a tax on the electricity. You flush the toilet, you pay a water tax. If you fly somewhere, you pay an airport tax. If you stay overnight, you pay a hotel occupancy tax. Since I do that a lot, I can tell you it's outrageous, anywhere from 10 to 15%. When you get home and use a telephone, you pay a telephone tax, and that includes your cell phone. I don't even want to tell you where those universal, take a look at your bill, where those universal charges go. That'll curl your hair. That'll be another show. You pay a property tax. on your home. And if you rent, your rent goes to cover the apartment or house or whoever owns your rental. It goes to cover their property tax. You turn on the TV, you pay a cable tax. When you die, your family pays a death tax. So right now, the average American, you know, us middle-class folks that are getting eaten by the zombies, we are now part of the Night of the Living Dead for approximately 130 days a year. That's right. 130 days a year, we work to send money in one way, shape, or form to the government and to the zombies who are eating our flesh. And then from there on, wow, we get to keep it, kind of. Did you know that in 1930, the average worker worked 57 seconds? Let me repeat that. In 1930, the average worker worked 57 seconds. That's 5 7 seconds, less than a minute, to pay their federal taxes. And now we work 130 days a year. So if you're making $45,000, here, I'll tell you what. I actually have an example here. Let's say your annual income is $53,000. Your federal tax rate at 13% is about $6,800. I'm just going to round numbers. Your Social Security and Medicare at 7.65% is $3,500. Your average Obamacare cost per family on the new taxes that I talked to you about long ago, I warned you, 21 new taxes, that was one of my most widely listened to shows, with four different national experts over 4 weeks, I might add. We might have to do that again. The Obamacare cost per family is another 7%, $3,700. State and local taxes on the average, depending upon where you live, 7% or $3,700. Property taxes on a $150,000 house, average, depending upon where you live, $3,300. Sales taxes, $1,200. Your real after-tax income is $30,700. 42% of your hard-earned money. I gave you the days, now I'm giving you the percentage in terms of cash. Of your hard-earned money has gone to support the government, who considers you an enemy of the state, and the zombies who are eating your middle-class flesh. Congratulations to us. We've been asleep at the switch, folks. All right, I got a little off track, but I thought those were some interesting statistics I would add to my little middle-class rant. The zombie rant. So if you take these two factors, number one, this rise of terrorism, the vows of the terrorists to cut off people's heads, come to America, do nasty things, all of which I take very seriously, I might add. And their growing capabilities, as allowed purposely by this president and his minions and his Muslim Brotherhood advisors in the White House that we pay for, more zombies eating our flesh. And you combine that with what's going on economically around the world. We talked a little bit about Europe, and I've done a number of shows on that. We talked about Europe today. And here in the United States, with our real income declining, with our middle class flesh being eaten by the zombies of government and leeches, one can only come to the conclusion that at some point in time, it is at least possible, many would say probable, and a growing number of folks say absolutely will happen, that there's going to be a breakdown in the system or a huge terror event which will cause a breakdown in the system. Never mind the fact that, you know, anybody can have a natural catastrophe, a forest fire, a personal fire, you know, a hurricane, a tornado. I mean, you name it. There's a host of natural disasters out there over which we have no control. So sorry, global warming, folks, over which we have no control. It's one of the reasons I added the family safety column to the articles. And today, to finish up the show, I'm going to tell you a little bit about water. And I think I'm going to make this maybe not every week, but at least a few weeks out of every month, I'm going to have a whole kind of diatribe, if you will, on a element that we'll go into in detail on family safety. Because it can't hurt, folks. It really can't hurt. The first and foremost thing you need to survive any type of crisis is water. Period. You can go days without food. You can go days, weeks without power. If you have clothes, you can go quite a while even in frigid weather with no heat. But you can only go a day or two without water. You should have at least 1 gallon of water per person, per day, in reserve for drinking purposes. If you live in an arid climate, you might want to have up to 3 gallons of water per day. And those of you in the West who are listening to this show, 3 gallons of water per day per person. If you want to calculate how much water you need, depending upon how big a reserve you want to have or for how long, you take the number of people times the number of gallons per person times the number of days, and that'll give you the total gallons that you need. So if you have 4 people in your family, you plan 1 gallon of drinking water per day for each person, and you want to have a 7-day reserve, you'll need to store at least 28 gallons of water. 4 times 1 times 7 equals 28. Do the math, store the water. 5-gallon water cooler jugs, you've all seen them. And you can buy them in quite a few locations, from Walmart to other places. They're the best to store stuff in. Sometimes people don't have room. One of the things that you should know is that if you store water in your garage, and most people don't know this, and this is important, don't put plastic containers on cement floors. If you store plastic on concrete, there's a chemical reaction which will contaminate the water. So put it on plywood or some other fairly non-porous type of membrane. Do not store plastic water containers on concrete. The best thing is original unopened water containers. You can pretty much rely on them being pure and uncontaminated. Many people have their 5-gallon deals. In fact, I do, and I fill them myself. And you know, I'm off. To be honest with you, I'm not. I don't often practice when I'm preaching here, but you should. They should be washed before you fill them. Between each fill, you should wash them out with bleach and water. You should wash out the caps with bleach and water. The most important, and then don't touch the caps when you put them back on, the insides of the caps. The most important thing you can do with water storage is to make sure that the water, using the word loosely, is pure. It's not contaminated. And the bacteria on your hands, on your sweat, whatever, can contaminate a water cap, and it can contaminate the water. You know, you want to store your items so that you use them. In other words, let's say you plan in our little example to store 28 gallons of water for your family of four for a 7-day reserve. You know, every month or two, use that water. Refill those canisters using these non-contamination techniques or buy new ones. In other words, rotate the stock. The same like you do with your food reserve, which I certainly hope you have. Now, there'll be times when, water just isn't available, or you run out of water. The 7 days isn't going to be enough, or whatever time period you choose. So let me give you a couple helpful hints on where you can get water that most people don't think of right in your own household. First of all, if you know a crisis is coming, fill up every tub and every basin in the house. The average bathtub holds about 60 gallons. Laundry room sinks can hold a lot. Okay? You could start your washing machine and then turn it off once the basin fills. That water can be used for washing or whatever. I wouldn't call it potable. And that'll give you 10 or 20 gallons of ready water. Most of this water is the same water that comes out of your kitchen tap. And as long as the basins are clean, I'm not talking about the washing machine, that water can be used for consumption. And if you've exhausted your supply of stored drinking water and you still need more, you have other options. Remember your hot water heater. People have all sorts of sizes, but your hot water heater is hot water that comes directly out of your tap, folks. You can attach a hose to the bottom, turn it on and turn it off as you need to, and have a ready supply, depending upon the size of your hot water heater, of anywhere from 20 to 80 gallons. In some large houses, 120 gallons. Some houses have dual hot water heaters. I would imagine in a situation like that, the water might not be hot because you might not have power or fuel. So there is a ready supply of potable, that is drinking water, for you if you need it. And it adds a lot. It might be the difference, so to speak. Those are my tips on water for today. And I thought I would start off with water, by the way, because it is the most important. My producer is signaling to me. Oh, so let's say you don't have quote unquote clean water, or you're unsure of the potability of the water and you need potable water. Let me give you a few last little hints before we wrap up. Number one, if you boil water for 3 minutes, it'll be safe to drink after it cools, obviously. If you want to sterilize water, you can drop a 3 to 4 drops of chlorine bleach, excuse me, per quart of water. You let it sit for 30 minutes, smell it. If it smells like chlorine, it's good. If it doesn't, repeat the process. Give it 30 minutes before you drink. Most of you don't know this, but this is used often by people in the wilderness. Solar water disinfection. If you can't do either of the other methods, you can utilize the sun's ultraviolet radiation. This is no kidding, it works, to make water safe to drink. However, you must use clear plastic containers. They cannot be larger than 2 liters, a couple quarts, because if there's too much water, the sun won't work. Remove all the exterior labels. Fill it with clear, particle-filtered water. If it's murky, the sun won't work. And expose the water, the bottled water in the plastic, cleaned, to direct sunlight for 6 hours, and that water will be safe to drink. That's a pretty cool little tip, isn't it? Particularly if you're out in the middle of nowhere and all you have is an empty water bottle. Well, I've probably overextended my stay. We've covered a lot today. I hope it's been instructive. Try and avoid the middle class flesh-eating zombies. Keep your eyes tuned to the downward spiral in the Middle East and be alert and store that water. This is Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side Radio.